Hello and welcome to the show, brought to you by the YAFC Youth Advocates for Change. And I hope that some of you have been able to listen to or watch our pilot episode of our show. But the YAFC Youth Advocates for Change is a group of young adults from across the U.S. that are people with disabilities experiencing or have experienced recently the transition from high school to adult life. And that could be in the areas of employment, independent living, or just trying to go to college or go to some kind of post-school training. And I'm really excited to have some of the young adults from the YAFC with me tonight. First, I want to have Carly introduce herself.
Hi, I'm Carly, and I live in Powhatan, Virginia.
And Carly's back from our pilot episode, so I wanted to have her introduce herself first and just say hello. She's back. She has come back to be here again to have an awesome conversation. And also with us tonight is...
I am Jennifer. I'm here in Bay Area, California. And I actually grew up in New Jersey.
Yeah, and yes, thank you. So you are East Coast, West Coast. Right?
We're doing
that East Coast, West Coast thing. And so, like I said, the YAFC spans across the United States, and it is supported by an organization that is supported by SPAN, which is a parent center, actually in New Jersey, and it's called the Ray Center. And the Ray Center really focuses on supporting those parent centers and supporting youth and families in the education transition process. And so, we're really, really excited to have this show and to be doing these episodes for you. And tonight, or in Jennifer's case, today, I guess it is still today. It really wouldn't be evening where she is. So we're going to talk about hidden disabilities and visible disabilities and the differences. So Jennifer, to get us started, why don't you kind of explain what we mean when we say hidden disabilities?
Yeah, I mean, I think a hidden disability is any disability, generally speaking, that is not going to be immediately evident when I walk into a room. So whether that be my ADHD or my autism or even anxiety or OCD, all of those things are something that you cannot see when you look at me. There are also going to be physical aspects. For example, if you're looking at me, you are not going to see that I get seizures or pseudo seizures. So all of these are things that are not immediately visible, and they add an entire layer from someone who might be walking with a cane or be a chair user, or that is someone who will immediately be clocked by most people as disabled. And it creates a different minefield when I'm talking of, especially in terms of disclosure, of when I apply for a job, what do I want to disclose? And sure. In my relationships, what do I want to say? Do I want to list out everything that I have, like I just did, to everyone that I know?
Right.
Or do I want to do maybe a micro disclosure of, this is how this affects me?
Oh, I like that, a micro disclosure. And so you can already tell that, you can probably surmise that Jennifer and Carly both have hidden disabilities. And Carly, so I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about your disability and what the experience is like for you, kind of similar to what Jennifer just did.
Yeah, so yeah, I have a hidden disability too. It's Fragile X syndrome. So yeah, so when I go into work or whatever, I definitely had to disclose that I had a hidden disability, because when I'm working or like out in public, no one would know that I have a disability. But over the years, I've definitely had a big support system, which is nice. But yeah, sometimes it's hard, because if some people don't know you have a hidden disability or have a disability, then sometimes it can affect you in different ways.
Sure. And just for full disclosure, if we're talking about disclosing a lot, I'm glad you guys brought that up already. As the host, I didn't really share this in our pilot, but I am a person with a visible disability. And so I typically wouldn't offer my perspective as a person with cerebral palsy in these conversations, but I think I'm going to ask Jennifer and Carly some questions and then maybe speak to the experience as a person with a visible disability and just kind of have that conversation. And so being a person with cerebral palsy and being a wheelchair user means that I really can't avoid being seen by the world when I go into any place. And so I've had to learn how to navigate that, just like Carly and Jennifer had to learn to navigate the world having a hidden disability. And so my first question is, and both of you in your intros sort of covered this a little bit or started to talk about this, because I think it's almost like a natural thing for you to talk about right away. But Carly, what is self-advocacy been like for you? Like sticking up for yourself, getting things in school or on the job that you might need. What has that been like? Or just talking to your friends about what your needs might be.
Yeah, so like it's definitely been challenging throughout the years, but got easier once I got older and was able to advocate for myself. But yeah, definitely in college, I had to advocate that I need more time on tests and more response time for things. So I would say that it just took a lot of practice, but we eventually got there.
Well, and how did you practice? Like what did you do? Did your parents make you do it? Did you get more comfortable with it? Were you first nervous? Like
all of the above.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, when talking with people, do you feel like you, Jennifer mentioned the concept of micro disclosing, like maybe only giving out certain information at times, or do you find that that's been tough to do? Like even going to a disability services office at a college, was that initially hard for you? And what made that easier? Like,
yeah, I mean, when I did take college, I mean, my experience in high school specifically around disability accommodation is something that I will talk a lot about tomorrow on the episode we're filming tomorrow.
Yeah.
But something to bring up here is that I was diagnosed with ADHD and OCD very, very young. But my OCD is even more invisible than my ADHD because when you're sitting in a room with me, I am moving. Like I do not sit. I have it is a visible type of ADHD, but you see that, but not any of the executive functioning challenges, any of the behind the scene things. And it was very much, it took a long time of myself being like, this is how this affects me before I could go. And I didn't really learn this until after high school of how to go to a person and be like, this is what you're seeing, but this is what I need help with. And those are two different things.
Sorry to interrupt you, but what made you finally say, I'm okay to share this information? Because Carly mentioned it that when she was younger, it was more of a challenge, but as she got older, it's easier. What was the tipping point for you in terms of like, I can do this now and express what I need?
Well, a lot of it was I had to work through specifically internalized ableism from my family, which,
okay.
Intentional, yes. Not because a lot of internalized ableism is not intentional, but in not understanding what a disability was, there are members of my family who refused to admit that I had a disability, and because I was close with some of those people, I was refusing to admit that I had a disability.
Yes.
And once I realized that this is a thing that affects me and I have to get accommodations and I have to work with that, and I can choose who knows it, but I have to be one of those people who is aware of this.
Yes, and I think,
and working with it.
One, I think what you're both kind of expressing is that initially it's hard because there is a stigma around disability, right? There's this, it's like, it's a taboo topic, right? And that can be for families, for you think there is at school, with people that, you know, you might want to have friendships with or dating relationships. It's like people are uncomfortable with what they just don't know what they don't know, right? And you're naturally uncomfortable with all of that, whether you have a visible disability or it's invisible, right? People are just uncomfortable with that. And the way that we have to deal with the stigma or ableism that you're talking about might be a little bit different, where people might automatically assume for me that I'm not capable of doing certain things. I don't have the competence to do certain things. Where in my experience of talking to other people with hidden disabilities is that sometimes people think that you're faking, or that it's not really quote unquote faking, right? Or that what you're experiencing isn't real. Carly, have you ever kind of had that where people ask you, why do you get extra time on tests, or why do you need this or that?
Not really. I get it sometimes, and I just, you know, explain to them, like, I just have like a learning disability if I'm not comfortable like disclosing what it is. But for the most part, I haven't really had any problems with that.
What about with friends or dating? Has that been anything? Because yeah, I have rules about all those things. Like when I share certain things about my situation and like the way I live my life. So I don't know if it's like that for you with friends or relationships. Or
it just depends how close I am with the friend. Because if I've known them for a while, then I would tell them more. But usually I'm fine with saying more information.
And were you always that way?
Not always.
Okay, so that's the point that I was trying to get at a little bit, right? Is that it can be challenging in other situations, but when you were younger, it might have been more of a challenge. But now it's like you've learned to be an advocate. And Jennifer, do you get people that would say to you, I don't really get what you tell me you're experiencing? Or I don't know what the word is, devalidate or say, or like that what you're experiencing is invalid or not real?
Yeah, I mean, that was incredibly common. And I mean, as an adult, part of the part of moving into adulthood was saying that, like, the people who do that to me are not the people that I'm going to continue to be around. So, you know, at work, that's one thing, right? Like, if at work, the focus, specifically where I work in a residential hospital setting, the focus isn't on me. But in my private life, if someone is going to devalue my experience, that's not someone that I'm going to continuously spend time around. So that might not be the most, that is how I have handled. If I trust you, I'm going to disclose my disability. And if you react in a way that is just devaluing consistently, I'm not going to be your friend anymore.
Yeah, and I think that's a really challenging thing for people that are, you know, of high school, college age, to get to a place where you feel self, what you're touching on, both of you, is that as young adults, or, you know, Jennifer would say, maybe, you know, she's getting older, but as young adults, it's like you learn to just deal with those experiences and realize who's worth the time and who's not. So you're not even allowing yourself to experience the prejudice or the bullying that might come. Cause I know a lot of young adults experience that, right? Like, and then you learn eventually that those people that do that aren't worth it. If they're going to do that to me, I'm out. Like I'm out. So, but go ahead.
It does take time, and it takes having the big thing that I was pushing is autonomy over your situation to be able to say, I'm not going to interact with these people. Because sometimes there are people who it's a friend of a friend, or it's a family member who you have to say, this person is consistently devaluing. And taking that autonomy for yourself is huge.
Yeah, so realizing who you want to stick it out with and who you don't, then being able to say, I'm not going to do this now. Like, I'm just not. And Man, you both are awesome at explaining this in really simple ways, and in some ways, some complex ways, just to look at what this really feels like sometimes. One of the things that I wanted to ask you, and Jennifer, we'll go to you first this time, just because I'm curious what you would say based on the fact that you just shared that some of your experience was like negativity from family. And I had that too. Like they, you know, people would be like, you know, Everett's never going to live a full life, or it was going to be awful for him, blah, 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 all this. So I can relate to that. And I feel like Carly, your experience is a little bit different, where your parents were ultra supportive from Jump Street from the beginning. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a little bit different than Jennifer's experience, is in the sense that, what advice, Jennifer, would you give to families who may be raising young children that have invisible disabilities and trying to help to support them to be the most productive young adults they can be?
I think there's two, and I'll talk a lot about this on the episode where we talk about not having accommodations and what that means.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest trap that is separate from that is a sort of toxic positivity, where you pretend that someone doesn't have a disability, but has, and so you say you're very capable, you don't have a disability, so just go do it. My grandmother used to tell me to focus like a laser beam, and I have ADHD, and if I try to focus long enough, my brain, like this is like my brain just shuts down, right? Like the executive functioning, the part of my brain that allows me to do things just stops working. So it's just not possible.
It's counterproductive almost. It doesn't work for you. Right.
But this toxic positivity that I can do this if I try hard enough. That's a good message. And that's a true message. I can do it. But if I don't acknowledge that I have a disability and I have to work with that, then I can't. Mm-hmm. I can do it, but I have to do it in a way that acknowledges my disability. And if I,
yes,
and then I can do whatever I want. But that sort of toxic negativity of, if we thought you couldn't do this, we wouldn't be pushing you,
right,
doesn't help, because it doesn't acknowledge the actual problem at hand.
Yeah, it's almost like, because you're trying to shield someone from what you perceive to be like a major issue that would scar them or cause pain. And the reality is, you should allow people to learn about their disability, understand how it impacts them, and let them learn how to explain it so that they can be better, right? That's what you're putting voice to. What's your other one? Was there another one, or did we get both in there? Was there another thing, or did I steal it by what I just said?
No, I mean, I think the other thing is that, and I'm not sure how, give me a second to figure out how I'm going to phrase this.
Sure.
So when it comes to, this is coming back to the autonomy, in that when you have, especially someone who is not an adult yet, there is a huge chance for the adults in their life to remove their autonomy around that disclosure. If someone wants people to know, if they don't necessarily have control over their own disabilities and how others know about that.
Sure.
And I think, with the people who I don't talk, but with the person who I have cut ties with in my family, there was a lot of things, but refusal to acknowledge my own autonomy is the number one thing that there was just no coming back from. So if I'm talking to a parent and say, look, you want to support this person as they are transitioning into adulthood, you need to acknowledge their autonomy, because someone's going to get autonomy whether you want to it or not. And the question is, if they are going to, with that autonomy, still want to talk to you, if you have been the one giving it to them from day one.
Yeah, and so I think what you're referencing, and I think for some parents, it would be hard to hear you say that, because they're so invested in getting support for their child, right? Yeah. They're super, and I mean, and so, but I think that it's hard for parents to let that go sometimes, and to learn that, like, you have to allow your child to have a voice in their life, in their decision making, in the things they share and do not share. And if they disagree, that's okay. And I think that can be really, really challenging for parents that pour their heart and soul into advocacy. But I think what you said is strong and it's correct. And I think that you can apply that principle of giving people choice and autonomy to anyone with any type of disability, and finding ways to do that with anyone is super, super important, because people hate being alienated because they feel like they can't make their own choice. And so, Carly, I'm gonna kind of flip this question a little bit, because you briefly said, or I kind of led you to say, that your mom was like a super advocate for you, and you all have been working together for a long time. Was there things that she did to really help you? You talked about a massive support system. So what did that support system look like for you to be where you are today?
She definitely, both of my parents actually, like, really pushed me just to, like, ask more questions in class, or when we're at a restaurant, they would have me tell my order, or instead of them doing everything, or me opening the door instead of them, like that kind of thing. And it definitely helped me over time to be able to, like, speak louder and speak up for myself.
Oh, I hated that. I tell my mom to this day that I felt like my life was like this whole, like, assessment of my independent living abilities. And as much as I hated that, it has helped me get to where I am today. And so for those families that are listening to this, to those adults that are out there, if you are that parent that is like a super advocate, it is still leads back to what Jennifer shared originally. It's about helping someone be independent and have autonomy to the most that they possibly can, right? So even you opening a door, ordering your own food, doing that is kind of the same. It's a different way of doing it, but it is the same concept that Jennifer is talking about. So, yes, I mean, as much as young adults hate that stuff, would you say now, Carly, that it's benefited you?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm.
In every way, right? I mean, you're working, you went to college, all this stuff, right? So it leads to good outcomes. Is there any final thoughts that you have, maybe about inspirational things to tell young people who might be in similar situations? Jennifer, is there anything that you would say to maybe help people kind of deal with this idea of having a invisible disability, and what that means and what that looks like?
I think the thing that I talk about a lot is that the ways my invisible disability affected me in school made it impossible for me to get anywhere. And part of that is just that there was not a lot of leeway given to me. But in moving into adulthood and now having a job that I work, I have multiple jobs, I work a lot, I am able to build my own accommodations by having that autonomy. The thing that I say is that, like, having control over my life gives me more control over my life. And that cycle of being able to take more and more time for myself is something that I just could not even have imagined happening a decade ago when I was in high school, completely like a fish out of water.
So you feel like you've grown, and the biggest part of it is that you made a decision to take control of your life, to be
Yeah, and I think it wasn't just a decision. I think part of it was that curating of my own experience of interacting with people who didn't devalue me and treating my disability as something that I can manage and then still go on and do my rest of my things. But I had to make those decisions on how I needed to do that.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Carly, any last words of wisdom to the young adults out there that might be hearing this, or to other parents about how they can support their either as a young adult supporting their parent through this, or parents supporting young adults through navigating this?
Yeah, I think it's just my advice would probably just be to try new things every day, like get out of your comfort zone, because it definitely helped me, because I used to be very shy when I was younger, but now definitely a lot better with speaking up for myself. So that definitely helps when you get out of your comfort zone.
Yes, get out of your comfort zone. And if you're a parent, do those assessments or make people order their own food and go to different experiences and do all those things to learn those skills, to be their best advocate, so they can embrace who they are as a person, right? And this goes for visible and invisible disability. Like embracing who you are, understanding who that is and who values you, like Jennifer just said, understanding that is such a powerful, powerful thing. Well, thank you both for your time today and tonight. And if you're listening to your second episode of ours, thank you for sticking around and hanging out with us. And we'll see you soon with our third episode, which I'm not sure what it'll be yet, but you'll see it. It'll be here. I know Jennifer and I are recording one tomorrow on the impact of not having accommodations in place. I think that'll be a really awesome discussion too. So thank you, Carly and Jennifer, for being here.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.